Hey guys, I'm Chris.
Hey everybody, I'm Robert.
And we're the Film Flamers.
And we are back from our trip to the Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans. We are rested. We've thought about the movies that we've seen. And we are prepared now to talk about them.
We are. And this year was, I think, particularly good compared to the last two. I think our ratings probably skewed a bit higher this time around.
Yeah, I feel like last year was subtly like either really, really bad or really, really good. And there were very few really good movies. And this year, there were a lot that I thought were like not quite mid, but higher mid maybe. And then some that I thought were just like pure, excellent, very good new horror films.
Yeah, the pendulum was definitely swinging last year. This year just kind of went towards the good, the really good, you know? So I was quite happy with our stay in New Orleans this year. And of course, we thank The Overlook every year for letting us go as press and for all that opportunity. And so we have a lot of really cool movies to talk about and warn you about.
Yeah, for a couple. And for some of these movies, I've already seen like advertisements on social media, like on Facebook. And I'm like, well, maybe they're like sending this to me because I've talked about it or logged it somewhere in my phone. Or maybe they're just having some sort of release coming up. And I'm like, yes, everyone go see these, or no, please stay far away.
Some of these are already coming out on streaming. Some of them are coming out in the theater. Some of them just don't have releases yet.
Right.
Similar to last year, right? Like what just came out in the theater, Late Night with the Devil.
Yep,
that we saw. We've seen that a year. Like it took a year to find its place.
It was literally playing in the theater while we were at the Overlook.
So it's going to be a little weird if people are putting that movie on their top 10s for 2024, and we're like,
yeah, it was already on somewhere in our list.
It was
from
like
last year.
Number 11. Literally for me, it was number 11 last year, so it didn't break quite into my top 10.
But super close. Maybe, just maybe though, you could do like a repeat if you wanted to and stick it on.
May
this
the haps, yes.
But that might require a rewatch.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It might. I wouldn't mind rewatching that. I've heard there's some things to see on a second viewing.
And that particular movie won the audience award last year. And obviously we'll talk about what won this year's.
We will?
Yeah, because we didn't see it.
We didn't see anything. Literally anything that won. I felt like we saw basically everything, I thought. And literally everything that won something we did not see.
That's right. So we saw we missed four movies from the festival. We saw everything else. Like Chris and I and company were just like leaving one theater and getting in line to go into the next auditorium to watch the movie. Like there was a day on Friday where we watched five movies back to back to back from like noon to after midnight.
Well, that was 2 days in a row.
Yeah, that's
first
right.
First day was two movies. Second day was five. Third day was five. Fourth day was another two.
That's right. And we even cut some things out of our proposed schedule to make lines easier or just to like have a break and have food that's not like popcorn,
right.
You know? And I mean, like you're in New Orleans. We don't live in New Orleans. This is also a vacation for us.
So we had to get Bananas Foster Beignet fries.
We certainly did. And I feel like anytime one is in New Orleans, you have to have Bananas Foster Beignet fries. And we had some really delicious pasta at a nerdy place. I mean, we have to go out and like do other things, obviously, but I feel like after this particular episode, you, dear listener, are going to have quite a list of movies to look forward to.
That's right. And I don't want to give you the impression that we missed the four good ones or the four important ones. No, I don't know that these are ever going to see the light of day in the theater based on the titles that we saw winning those awards.
That's true. And also, as like we talked about last year, and I'm sure we'll probably touch on maybe just a little bit the festival itself. Like, I don't know how much I trust the voting, you know?
We don't, really.
Yeah.
And so, but that's a different story.
True.
And every year is a different saga with
that's right.
the voting for these movies, which is also entertaining. They're doing their best. But you know what? We handpicked these movies. Really, Robert worked hard this year to pick the movies that we thought would be really the most accessible and most of interest to our listeners. Mm-hmm. And we were not wrong. And you were not wrong. So...
thank you. Because there were some things that originally were not on the docket. And I was like, no, like, I feel like this movie is what our podcast is about. And we can just jump right into it. Because one of the movies that I added, you know, sort of like right before we went to the festival was a movie called I Don't Understand You. It was the first movie that we watched.
Yes. And this was actually one of our favorites, right? So our combined score for this was 4 stars.
Yeah.
And this is about a gay couple that is looking to adopt a new baby, a child.
Mm-hmm.
not even through a surrogate, but actually just straight up adopt. And they've been trying for multiple years. So they're finally taking a vacation, but she's not due for like, you know, 8 weeks or something, right? For another like 2 months. And so they go off to Rome, Italy, which is, of course, where I honeymooned just like the last year and a half or so.
That's right.
With my husband. And so like they're standing in some of those same places that we stood. It was like hitting really close to home. And then this is really about the lost in translation-ness of being tourists in a different country.
That's right.
They do not speak Italian. Hilariously, like not even a little bit really. And so, and the Italians are using play on words with each other sometimes. And so it's like no one's really understanding each other. And it's a comedy of errors. And it is a black comedy as far as its darkness towards death and injury and just like the blasé like shit that goes on by the end of it.
And I think it's a really good also dark comedy about watching a couple like be in a situation and how one would react with your partner in things like this. One of the reasons why I added this movie is because it was, you know, a queer horror film, right? Or queer horror adjacent. And I was like, this is kind of everything that our podcast is about, right? Horror adjacency, queer aspects to horror. And I was like, there's no way in the world that we can miss this. And I'm certainly glad that we did not.
Definitely adjacent, you know, but it was at the Horror Fucking Film Festival, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, come on. And so anyway, but yeah, they end up going into the kind of the countryside a little bit in Italy, and they're supposed to go to this romantic dinner. There's mm-hmm. a dark and stormy night. They get lost. They don't know if they're in the right place, you know, and then like people are trying to help them, and then they don't think they're trying to help you. Anyway, it's just this comedy of fucking errors where it's just it goes into like absolute like mayhem. So I definitely would recommend this once you can, and I hope that it goes to theaters, but I probably will end up somewhere like Shudder, right?
Yeah, I would assume so, or at least on some sort of streaming service somewhere. Out of all the movies that we covered, this is the only one that doesn't have an actual poster listed on Letterboxd, so I don't even think this movie is ready for release yet or is intended for release, although I feel like when it is, people are going to really like this movie. I mean, the two lead actors in this. Yeah, so Andrew Rannells and Nick Kroll are in this. And they are just fucking delightful. Really, really funny. I feel like all the Italian actors in this movie were fucking hilarious. The comedic timing is on point.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a really good start to the festival. It wasn't even like the quote-unquote like opening night movie. It's the first thing that we saw.
It's like the gay Italian version of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yes. I mean, people are dying around them, you know? And they are dealing with it. And there's some really touching moments. I cried at the end of this movie. And I really, really just enjoyed the shit out of it. And, I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah,
for sure. The next thing that we watched right after that was the traditional opening night film. And it was a movie called Cuckoo.
Right. And so this is, this has one of our favorites, right? It has Dan Stevens.
Oh yeah. Yeah. One of two movies that we're going to talk about with Dan
Stevens. One of the most popular like trans actors actually from Euphoria mm-hmm. is in this. And this essentially is after the story of the cuckoo bird that will actually give its young to a different bird to parent.
And yeah, they'll like leave its feed. Egg or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then, you know, it hatches and then it picks it up later, I guess. I don't know. But it's the whole thing. That's what they call the cuckoo, I guess. But anyway, it's like, what would happen if your monster was kind of like that?
It's true.
Your horror movie monster.
And
it's great. This is a German-American film, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we saw there were quite a bit. I think like more this year than the 2 years that we've been prior, there have been a lot of like foreign language movies, or at least movies that were sort of like produced by foreign countries at the festival. And this was the first of many that we watched. And, as always, like with these kind of movies that haven't been released yet, we're going to try to not spoil as much as possible. And I think this is one of those movies that you really can't say too much about without giving away a lot of the plot. It's very giallo-esque, in my opinion, from the mystery standpoint, from a bird standpoint, which I think we've seen in lots of giallo films. And I don't know, it was just really reminiscent of
The Cuckoo
of
with the Crystal Plumage.
Or even like that gay giallo movie that came from France a couple years ago with birds everywhere, you know?
The Maltese Cuckoo. I don't know.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So this is an interesting movie monster in it. And there's like some, you know, they're basically a family that's going into like the German Alps or somewhere.
Yeah.
Dan Stevens is like the scientist there or whatever.
And also resort owner.
Resort owner for the, like for medical purposes, right? And obviously there's something else going on up there, right? And so you already know what we talked about with the cuckoo and kind of the premise there. And it's just really kind of interesting. There's some really, really standout horror scenes, especially there's this particular chase scene that's very, very interesting. So this is worth checking out. We give it a collective of 3.5. So very good and worth watching. I think some of you would really, really love it and some of you won't like it as much. About a third of this, maybe a fourth of it is in German, but the rest is in English.
Yeah, and I would say there's not so much in German that would like give people who don't like to like read subtitles a reason to not watch the movie. I think that the movie is really, really good. I feel like some of the performances are great, especially from its lead. So like Dan Stevens and Hunter Schafer were both excellent. And there's enough going on in this movie to sort of keep you guessing because it went in places that I didn't see it going, and that's always fun. You know, at least fun for me, right? To keep you guessing about it. But that brought to the end of our first day. And
great day.
Yeah, I was really happy with the way that things were going. And I feel like after that, you know, we sort of like sat around and talked and like just really were looking forward to the next day, which kind of got off to a rocky start a little bit. The next movie that we watched on the second day of the festival was a movie called Things Will Be Different.
Yeah, so I think I liked this more than others, but this is kind of, they kind of sold this to us, at least the intro, because someone from the festival would stand up and intro all these films, right? And so they kind of sold this to us as like how much you can do, the scale of your story with so little, right? This is like a single location, basically just two actors, and they're doing time travel, essentially. And they do it kind of convincingly with editing and like recordings back in time and forth. You know, and so essentially the premise here is that they're like doing a heist, and then they go to this house which is capable of doing some sort of time travel, and so they're hiding in time from the law, essentially, and then they kind of get stuck there, and it's not stuck in the way that you think. So it's kind of interesting and from a science fiction point of view. And I liked that as much as the premise, but others didn't like so much because there was some stalling with the story as far as I think momentum, and then there was some writing issues with the dialogue.
That was my number one drawback from this movie, was like this the stalls with the story. I was like, all right, it needs to go somewhere, and it doesn't seem to be doing that, much like being stuck in time, I guess. And really, the dialogue in this movie, I thought, you know, like my six-year-old nephew could have written better dialogue at certain points, and maybe I'm being a little too harsh.
I didn't notice it that much.
Really? I mean, I just like, there were some times that I was like, I feel like these characters are repeating themselves back and forth to each other. And I was just like, come on now.
One thing that I liked about it is that it's a brother and sister.
Yeah. Right?
We didn't get, you know, lovey-dovey romance, you know, betrayal, jealousy, blah, 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 soap opera.
And thank God.
Right. There was interfamily drama, you know,
a little bit.
And I thought that was just a little bit easier for me to swallow a little bit.
Everything on paper for this movie is exactly what I want out of film for the most part, right? And I feel like you mentioned that to me like after we had left the theater and I gave it the rating that I did, and we were sort of like standing in line for the next movie and talking about what we liked and didn't like, and you're like, this movie is single location, very small cast. And I was like, yeah, you know, like I should have liked this movie.
But you were falling asleep.
Yeah. But I was falling asleep in this movie,
which is the cardinal sin. If it's not entertaining and if you're like bored, that's literally like the number one thing.
And I mean, like, I think like one of the biggest takeaways that I had from it was that I was really mad at like the main actress's upper lip or something like that. Like I was being super nitpicky with this movie, and I don't know why, honestly. Like I feel like when it comes to science fiction, sometimes I have a very low threshold for enjoyment, but it wasn't not understandable. It wasn't science fiction enough for me to hate that part of it. I think it was literally just like the script and story of this movie that was like holding me back.
Or maybe we're still just kind of waking up from being, you know,
up for whatever. Yeah.
Up for
and traveled.
No. Well, also like we were woken up every day.
Oh my God.
At our Airbnb by a construction next door and like Mexican Oompa music.
I mean, their music was so loud.
7 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday.
Yep. I mean, they were determined on building everything they were building next door for sure. And
of course, we're watching movies till like 1 a.m.
That's right. And then staying up afterward a little bit, you know, got to have a cocktail.
Got to get home.
But I mean, like, Things Will Be Different was kind of like mid. When I look at like low mid for all the movies that we saw, it was toward the bottom of the things, but it compared in no way. It pales in comparison to the movie that followed that.
Yeah, we gave Things Will Be Different a 2.5-star, which is very middle of the road, right? That's meh, that's beige.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the next film was a little movie called All You Need Is Death.
Right. And so All You Need Is Death is an Irish independent film, I believe, about, or at least about Irish folk songs.
Right.
Right. And the power of song and language and how it intercuts with culture and an actual, like, the Irish language outside of English. Right. And the power of whatever language came before that, you know, so there's a lot of intrigue there and like spirits that are kind of, you know, Darby O'Gill'd into the story a little bit. And we did not like this movie. We gave this a 1.5 and I just never want to see this again. Like,
I was actively angry when we walked out of the theater watching it. Because, A, I was also falling asleep during parts of this. I like the premise,
you know?
I mean, on paper, I did too. So, like, whenever we're choosing these movies, guys, and I hope that some of y'all have visited the Overlook Film Festival's website and have at least considered going, you know? They give you, like, a snippet of what it's about. And it's clear that the people who do the programming for this are sort of writing some of these things. Because they sell it, you know? Yeah. And they have to sell the movies that they've chosen. And, like, they were talking about people collecting folk songs, things that have never been heard before, and sort of like songs unleashing otherworldly powers. And I was like, that sounds intriguing as fuck. And
I kept thinking, like, this is like Suspiria, but it's like Big Song or something instead of Big Dance.
Big Dance. Because there are like people fighting over collecting songs that have never been heard before.
Like, how are these people getting paid? Like, some of you are here in this closet at this gymnasium or whatever.
Yeah.
In the back rooms of the school or something because you paid a lot of money and some of you are here on sheer talent. Like, you know, and I'm like, what?
Who? No. It doesn't make any sense. So essentially in this movie, we have two
music
people.
Music archivists. Like the fucking, what are, like the Illuminati of like music archivists. I'm like, please.
Who knew? Who knew that I could aspire to be such a thing? But we have like these two factioning groups of people, like essentially one woman and a duo who are collecting songs, and they find a woman who has a song that's never been heard before that is sold in this very old Irish and only handed down by the women in her family.
And it doesn't help that there's virtually no music accompaniment and they're like screeching and yelling these songs.
I don't know. Essentially, the name of the song that she sang was Love is a Knife with a Blade for a Handle. And I'm
which
like,
which I think
okay.
is a better movie title.
Right. Than All You Need Is Death. Because all we needed was death, really, by about the halfway point in this movie.
For ourselves.
Yeah. And I don't know. Things were happening, y'all. And like, I don't know. This is the one time where I would say, like, don't watch a movie, but go watch the movie. Because I need people to be on my side for this.
You want validation.
Because this is the movie that I was just talking about.
You got plenty of validation from the people you were with.
Thank God, because Facebook has been recommending this movie to me like no other.
Oh, my God.
There is trailers. There is an advertising campaign out there for it. So I know this movie is going to be released at least on streaming somewhere. And they are gunning for an audience. And I'm telling y'all, like, it's not good.
No.
It's just not good.
Unless you're in an Irish folk song
collectionist,
music archivist,
yeah,
person.
I don't know.
It's like niche of a niche. It's like hat on a hat. I don't know.
1.5 stars, though. I think as far as like combined ratings for the, yeah, it's got to be one of the lowest for
it
the
is
film
our lowest. No, it's by far our lowest
out of everything that we've covered on this podcast, either directly or sort of remotely or like by happenstance.
Well, there was one last year that was pretty close at the festival, but
yeah, maybe Poultrygeist might.
Poultrygeist, yeah,
yeah. But things got much, much better as the day went on, because the next movie that we watched is a little French film called Infested.
Now, this was probably the one I think about the most when I think of the festival. My brain keeps going back there, even though I would think I'd be thinking about some of the other things that I really enjoyed just as much or more. But I keep thinking about this one because I want to show it to people.
Yes.
Because it's so fucking fun.
It is
this
so
was
much
the
fun.
Fun horror movie. Not even trying to be fun, but it's just an experience. It's the kind of fun horror movie where you are excited to be scared, excited to be squirmy, right? Because these are fucking spiders.
That's right. Spiders
it's
everywhere.
All, it's like a big apartment building on the outskirts of Paris in France, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
low income, for sure.
Low income, yep. Yeah. And there's a spider that is procured from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And it quickly breeds and infests the entire place. And it is shut down wreck style, if you recall that movie, Wreck yep. or Quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the scenes in this movie, like, I will never recover from, but I want to see it again. And I want to show my sister because she's also arachnophobic. And I just, this movie was good. You get to know the characters.
Yeah.
You feel for the characters when they die or they live. There's a lot of really great tension, like that's reminiscent of like early James Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a really, really great effects. The spiders look too real. And there's some real nasty shit that they do. And so, you know, not like over the top, like nasty gore for the sake of nasty gore, but like it's spider horror,
mm-hmm.
right? And they really, really do it. And they go for it. And I'm really looking forward to watching this again. And I'm also looking forward to the other spider movie that's coming out this year called Sting.
Yeah.
Right?
So this is like the year of the spider, obviously, because Sting looks really good. And this movie was also really good. And this movie was released in France and possibly throughout Europe last year. Because when I was looking for things to watch last year and sort of like, you know, Googling like the highest rated horror movies, this popped up on lots and lots of lists.
Yeah.
But it wasn't available to us. And so when I saw it was playing at the festival, I was like, yes, we have to see this. A, because it was so highly regarded last year overseas, and because I know how you feel about spiders and I want you to be scared just as much as I am scared sometimes. It doesn't happen very often. I wouldn't say that you were scared during this, but you were certainly squirming.
I had a smile coming out of this, you know, because I love any horror movie that's capable of actually affecting me.
Yep.
And this definitely affected me. And so I had a bunch of fun.
And I loved the characters in this movie.
Yeah.
Like you said, coming out of these two movies, things will be different and all you need is death. I was like, finally, a movie today where I'm connecting with some of the characters. And I really, really loved like the main actor and main character.
We almost didn't go to this too. We were going to break for lunch after those two movies. And we were just like...
Or we were going to go to trivia or something like that. Yeah, because we skipped trivia every year. And I was just like, maybe this is the year. But we're like, no. Infested. And I'm glad that we did. I'm glad that we watched this. And the thing is, guys, like this is one of the first movies out of everything on this list that you're going to be able to see because it's coming to Shudder at the end of April.
Yes.
That's right. So, I mean, do yourself a favor and watch this movie. What do we rate this collectively?
4 stars.
Four stars.
I think it might be even ticking higher if we, you know, continue rating it higher.
Yeah, I feel like every year there's a movie in the festival. We just cannot wait to show people this particular movie. And last year was probably Talk to Me. And I think this year it's Infested.
And it might be there's at least two more that we can't wait to recommend too.
That is true.
Pull our horses a little bit. Because that is definitely, let's no spoilers, but spoiler, Infested is in our top three.
That's right. Let me open up a beer to talk about this next movie because it stars one... Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God, Arcadian. Right. This is, I keep thinking about this one too. Now this was better than I thought it was because I'm not a huge fan of Nicolas Cage generally, especially after last year's, I think it was opening film, which was, you know, starring in Nicolas Cage's Dracula in New Orleans with Renfield. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was okay. Right. I much more enjoyed an Arcadian, which is a post-apocalyptic monster movie
mm-hmm.
with Nicolas Cage and his two sons who have been in various things, including one from It. And the monsters in this are super original and interesting. Like wolf, gorilla, like critters, like fold out arms and claws and stuff. I don't want to give more spoilers, but these monsters are really, really cool. I thought the story was good. I thought the pacing was nice. I would go see this. I think it's coming out in theaters like nowish in like the next week or two. Select it's theaters, maybe.
Coming out very, very soon. I think very, very like limited release, but before the festival. And like always, I mean, we have a Shooting the Flames episode. And so like Chris and I are always on the lookout for movies that get kind of buzz. And, you know, before this festival, I was just like, all right, if I were going to make a wish list of like small horror movies that are nowhere coming out in 2024, Arcadian was on that short list. And they added this. It was the second round of movies that was announced. And so I got very, very excited. And I also am not a huge fan of Nicolas Cage. As of late, I have grown to love him in horror movies because his tends to be over the top and kind of batshit, but this was a very understated performance for Nicolas Cage. In fact, I feel like the two guys that were in this movie, Jaden Martell being like the most famous, you know, had a much bigger role. You know, this movie wasn't about Nicolas Cage, but more about like what it's like to pass the torch from one generation to another in this sort of like
it was not thing. A vehicle. You thought going in, you thought it might be a vehicle, a la like Will Smith and I Am Legend, like we just talked about on Patreon, right? This was not. And so it's kind of interesting to see how that kind of unfolds. This is not his story.
Nope. And there were lots of things in this movie, more than just the monsters, like just like any good apocalypse survival movie. We're talking about like the evils that men can do, you know, in a newly crafted society. And it went to places that I wasn't quite expecting it to go to. It was touching. It was heartfelt in his performances. The monsters are fucking phenomenal. I think some of the best creature work that I've seen since No One Will Save You last year, like with those really cool aliens, you know. Like, they're just really, really neat-looking monsters and a great story.
Right. And I think this is one that we might have rated a little too low in hindsight, but we'll have to see because this is a combined score of 3.5.
And I feel like that's pretty much where I had, like, given my rating, you know? Like, I wanted a little bit more from it at the end of the day, but comparatively to some of the things that I've seen recently and obviously some things that we saw at the festival – I thought that it was a good movie, something that I would definitely watch again.
You may have given it a 3. I may have given it a 4.
I think that's what happened, actually. Because I know that we left this theater, and I know you liked it more than I did.
Yeah.
But we moved on to our last movie of the day. So our fifth movie, back to back to back, again, was a South Korean film called Sleep.
Yes, and this is one that everyone else liked more than I did.
I really enjoyed Sleep, actually. And this is a film that was directed by Jason Yu, who's sort of a protege of the man who directed Parasite, right? And I thought this movie was kind of bonkers and really fun in ways that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting more of like a dramatic kind of horror film, and it turned out to be something completely different for me.
A lot of these South Korean movies are a little batshit and a little tongue-in-cheek, right? That's right. If not most of them, you know, and so I want to say like Sleep, you know, it's that small casting location that you love so much. Doesn't work as much for me. The scale of this just never really kind of got bigger. And it was just like, there was a lot of solutions in the way. And so like, for me, I'm trying to solve a problem and I kept solving it and they weren't doing it. You know what I mean? In different ways all throughout this movie. And it kind of annoyed me. So our combined score is 3.5 as well.
That's right.
So, but I think you rated it. I probably rated it a 3 and you probably rated it a 4.
That's
so
it's exactly what happened. Yeah. So like in this movie, we have a woman who sort of works this corporate job and her husband is an actor and he starts sleepwalking and doing random crazy things at night.
Yeah. The first thing is he injured himself, you know,
and is eating all the food and things like that. And the woman is getting like increasingly concerned about his activity because she has
a... He almost fell out a window. Yeah.
Because she just had a baby. Right.
Right. And she's getting ready to have a baby and then she has the baby and then, you know, they have to figure out how to do it because, of course, something happens with the dog and other things. And so, you know, it's one of those movies you just have to watch.
There's a twist, you know, so be prepared for the twist. And I feel like I liked the movie a lot up into the twist.
I saw the twist coming from basically the beginning as soon as they had a throwaway line about XYZ.
Yeah.
You know, I knew exactly what was happening. And so that's maybe why.
I feel like this movie has a really good first half and then it sort of goes downhill and
it belabors at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it does. And I think that's what kept me from giving it a higher rating because I feel like the acting, I feel like the dialogue, I feel like the timing in this movie is good until you get to the part where you're like, okay, you know, like that's what it's about.
It felt like it was a short that got out of hand.
And probably, I mean, like, and this movie did feel like something that was a short at one point that got extended a la Cargo, you know, and or Rare Exports. And that doesn't always seem to work. I feel like there are lots of things in this movie that people will like. I feel like if you're talking about a movie for the masses, I feel like people would enjoy it, you know? So, but I mean, I would stand by our rating both separately and together for this movie. But that was the end of the second day. So we started Saturday again around the same time, around noon, and we watched a movie called New Life, which is a Canadian film but it takes place in America. And it's about a woman who is trying to escape a governmental agency that seems to be on her tail. And we don't really know why. The pieces of the puzzle are being put together as we're watching it. And like, we're dealing with two different women, sort of like one chasing after the other, one trying to escape and one pursuing the other woman. And the movie itself becomes something that it's, I don't know, it changes so much and just becomes something different with every turn. And I feel ultimately that's what brings this movie down.
It's so obviously a small, low budget movie that's trying to look bigger than it is or seem bigger. And they keep hanging lanterns on it. It's like, why isn't this a national response? Why isn't this XYZ? And there's like some throwaway line. And they ask that question, like they belabor their own point in that way. It's like you can only have to hang a lantern once. You don't have to do it four or five times during the movie. Mm-hmm. She's like screaming about it. And I'm just like, because this is essentially about a contagion.
That's right.
This girl has some sort of contagion and she's like traipsing across the states. And there's one woman who can barely walk is going after her. And it's just, it's kind of stupid. And I love the actors in this movie.
Yeah,
I do. You know, one is from... the main lady that's chasing is from Lost, as well as For All Mankind.
Yep.
And then I forget what the girl was from, but the priest or whatever was on Stargate SG-1. He was also in Abigail. He's not the priest, sorry. He was like her boss or whatever. Anyway, so this is basically, any contagion movie, but this is a team of one going after the person that's spreading all this contagion. So it's really frustrating, and I think like if it had a bigger budget and a larger scale and a little bit of a smarter script and better pacing, I just keep listing things it could be better at.
Which is bad.
Then it would have been fine. You know, I like the actors, like I said, and that's it basically. So we gave this a combined score of 2.5.
Yeah, this movie had a trailer that we watched before we saw the movie, and it seemed a little bit more cat and mouse than what it was. And this movie like is holding a lot of things close to the vest. But as it starts to reveal like what's actually happening, it doesn't really work.
Your life's like, oh, it doesn't have anything else to reveal. This is it.
Yeah. It's trying to be a zombie movie. It's trying to be a contagion movie. It's trying to be, you know, a thriller.
It doesn't achieve any of them.
That's right. It's trying to be way too many things at the same time. And I feel like we've been talking about in the podcast, like we're waiting for a response to the Pandy. You know, in horror, and we know what's going to happen. And we've gotten a smattering of those things. But if this is what horror is going to be in response to the Pandy.
Yeah, the closest thing was When Evil Lurks.
Right.
Yeah.
Which worked on other levels because it wasn't really about
it was our number two film last year.
That's right. And this movie is not going to be in our top 10 for sure when it comes to 2024 at the end of the year.
Nope. Unless there's just a sea of two stars, it's not going to be.
I mean, if it's anything like fucking 2023, then maybe.
Crack the top 10. Jesus.
But I feel like we walked out of this theater and you used the word, and what the fuck did you call it?
Oh, yeah. So I was saying that it was basically irresponsible from... It was like a response to the distrust in the Pandy response, right?
That's right.
And medical workers and stuff. Like, she has a contagion. They don't tell her anything about having a contagion. Yep. They just lock her in a cell. They don't tell her anything. They basically, you know, she sees her boyfriend diseased and locked up in there, like, but not in like in a hospital setting. Mm-hmm. And it's all just fucked. It's like they're in Abu Ghraib or something like that. You know, and it's just like, that's not how it works. You know, it's like, you got to give people the benefit of the doubt. And it's like, they're like all cloak and dagger shadowy organization. It turns out they're more on the corporate side.
That's right. They're like contracted to do this.
But it was just like the way that they did this, it was just like feeding into that dialogue about, you know, anti-government, anti-social capital, about like pandemic response. And I'm like, that's not, why are you doing that? Like, it was like that was the horror that they tried to focus in on rather than like this disease itself, which was like way worse than Ebola in this movie. Anyway, we have to move on.
We have to, because like for me, this movie was like so middle of the road. Like I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I was just like, on to the next movie. And we did. And we moved on to the movie that I was most looking forward to seeing at this festival. Like, there was no way in the world that I was going to miss In a Violent Nature.
Right. And this is our number one movie.
Combined rating, right?
For combined that? Rating. Well, we have our top five, actually. Our top five movies all have 4 stars.
Great. Ratings. Oh, my God. That is a good year.
Right. And so we had to really kind of decide where we wanted to place these. And I think In a Violent Nature is a really number one, not because it's so much better than, like, say, Infested, but because it is so important, I think, and novel. Yes. Right? Because Infested, that's kind of been done.
Yep.
In a certain way. They twisted it up. They put it in the boggle or whatever, shook it up, you know.
And they're like, here it is.
Here it is. But In a Violent Nature is, you know, just like the twist that is on every shot, every slasher, right? Mm-hmm. But the camera is following the slasher and not the teenagers.
That's right.
And yet we can still kind of hear and see what the slasher is seeing and hearing. And we see that slasher plot happening all around us and in the background, which is genius.
Yep.
And it's done so well. It's just kind of inconsistent mm-hmm. in the way it's shot. You'd think the whole thing would be a oneer, you know, or the whole thing would really stick and follow its own rules and stick to the slasher. But they break their own rules a lot. Some of it really works and some of it doesn't as much. It's kind of inconsistent for me. And I really also wanted a soundtrack here, a nice 80s synth soundtrack to go with this. I liked some of the absence of it for parts of it. I thought that was really, really good. But I love a good score. And an 80s slasher, especially today, like an It Follows style soundtrack, would have worked amazingly here. But that's a nitpick. And so, again, 4 stars from us.
I kind of disagree about the soundtrack, right? Because I know we talked about it at length after the movie. Maybe not at length, but we discussed it, right? This movie has a definite absence of sound as far as like a score goes.
A definite right? or a deafening?
Well, I mean, you're hearing the sounds of nature in this, you know? And
yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into it because I feel like out of all the movies that we've covered so far in the festival and we'll talk about moving forward, I feel like this is one that needs a deep dive at some point. Like this is the most deep dive worthy movie out of here.
Kind of. I don't know. Like it's pretty straightforward. I don't know if there's any like deeper meaning out here that we couldn't find in other slashers from the other perspective. It's just from a filmmaking perspective. It's like a horror movies movie.
Yeah. So this right? is the movie made for horror fans. Like yeah. I feel like people who like just like scary movies wouldn't get it, no. maybe wouldn't love it, no. obviously, right? This is for someone who understands what a horror movie is, how it's constructed, and really loves the slasher subgenre.
Yeah, I just really wanted to be more popcorn, kind of like that, and lean into it. And I knew exactly what I would do to make that happen, and it's mm-hmm. all there. I would just like recut it and score it a little bit, right? I don't want to take away like the moments of interesting peace and beautiful photography that's in this, by the way.
Yeah.
Of this following this guy through the forest, you know, at dawn and stuff like that. And there's some beauty to this, especially in the photography, and I wouldn't take away from that with music or anything else, but mm-hmm. it's like all these things that I knew exactly what I'd do to fix, you know, to make it like be a huge movie, I know it's not going to do. It's just too much to change from the director's vision. And it's also just like frustratingly inconsistent for me. But still, again, it's our number one for the festival.
And I was also a little frustrated by the inconsistencies with this because I feel like there are some moments where it starts to rely a little bit too much on like the ancillary things going on around the killer. And I wanted it to focus. You know, the ending is what it is. And I feel like maybe on a second watch, I might feel different about it, but I was expecting something to happen during that ending. And, you know, I didn't quite get what I wanted, but I feel like this movie got a shit ton of buzz out of Sundance. It also played at Southwest. So I feel like it's getting the buzz that it needs. It's going to have a theatrical release. Then it's going to go to Shudder and I'm probably going to watch this movie again. I know I will.
Oh, of course we will.
And, yeah. I don't know. It's just, I feel like this is a movie that was made for me, for us, for our listeners.
Yes.
You know?
And it's definitely going to be in the top 10.
Oh, for sure this year. And I don't know. I can't wait to hear what people have to say about it, you know? And I just was really, really happy after watching this movie. And I was also really happy for other reasons as we went into the next movie that we watched that day. And that's a French Canadian film called Red Rooms.
Right. And so this is one of the rare courtroom horrors or really horror adjacent. This is almost not horror at all.
This is way more horror adjacent than even the last horror adjacent movie that we were talking about on this list, which was I Don't Understand You. Like this is like so horror adjacent. It is a chiller, as your husband would call it.
Or it's a courtroom thriller. It's not even like Exorcism of Emily Rose, which is
which is definitely a horror movie.
Hardcore supernatural horror, but also courtroom, which I love. And we need to deep dive that. But Red Rooms follows this very eccentric woman who makes her way through life by just kind of day trading. For whatever she needs. And she's in this high rise apartment and everything else, but she's also obsessed with this court case for a serial killer going on, where I'm not sure she's too interested at first in whether he did it or not, but she's kind of into it. Right. And so she's actually sleeping on the street to make it into the courtroom on time in the morning so she can make it in there and see him. And she kind of makes her way through this court case and eventually does some extreme things to find out and prove that he is innocent or guilty.
That's right.
And the things that she does and the things that she has to see the people that she affects is part of this movie. And I don't want to give it more spoilers than that, but it's really, really interesting. Of our top four or five, this is probably the bottom of my pile, but I know it's the very tippy top of yours.
Yes, I really, really loved this movie. And reading some things about it and during the intro to this film from the festival, what they told us was that it was up for a lot of like Canadian Oscars, essentially, or the equivalent of Canadian Oscars. And I can see why. This is a really well-made film. I mean, this is like film for me. And I don't know, like there were some moments of that main character that I thought were kind of unhinged. She was super fucking interesting to me. And I was kind of expecting this movie to go to places that I didn't want it to.
This is basically the one that we watched last year with Rebecca Hall.
Yeah.
Like this was that movie for me. Mm-hmm. What was that movie called?
Resurrection.
Yeah, this is this year's Resurrection.
For sure, because I love Resurrection, and I loved this. It's very, very psychological, very, very thriller, you know? Similar to movies that we've covered on this podcast, I don't think covering this movie on the podcast would be a far stretch, you know?
But I don't feel like anyone was ever in danger.
No, I mean, because the people who are in danger are already dead.
The body count is zero, you know? So that's kind of my problem with it, is that it didn't really do much. It was like an episode of Dark Mirror or Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. You know, that was like extra long.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I still think that like this, the level of filmmaking in this, I think the acting was incredible.
Yeah, from they did a lot of so sides. Much with so little. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And I really, really enjoyed this movie. And I think out of everything that we saw, I ended up thinking about this movie the most afterwards.
Oh, really?
You know, like I really want to watch it again. I would recommend that people watch this. I don't think this is one that I would actively sit down and be like, oh, we have to watch this together right now.
Yeah.
Like this is the kind of movie that I think I would enjoy watching on my own.
The group watches are like in a violent nature invested in some others.
For sure. This is not one of those movies.
Yeah.
But it's certainly one that you want your friends to see so you can sit down and talk about it after you've all watched it independently.
Yeah. It's more of a cerebral.
Yeah. So, but it was really, really good in my opinion. And I was happy with it. In fact, I feel like when we left the theater and, you know, we had to like tear your ballot and turn it in, I voted the highest for this. This is the only movie that I tore the number five spot for.
Okay.
So, and then we moved on to our last movie, which I think is the biggest popcorn release and the only world premiere that we saw this year at the festival. And that's for a little movie called Abigail.
And of course, this is not the last movie. This is the last movie of that day.
That day. Yes.
Yeah. Abigail. And so this is another Dan Stevens.
That's right.
Right. And of course we love him here at the podcast. And this is of course the ballerina vampire-esque movie that I thought was going into theaters nowish.
Yeah. So it's going to be released in the theaters at the end of April. So essentially about 2 or 3 weeks after the end of our festival. Yeah. So
to me, this really felt like one of those like late 90s haunted house movies or something, you know, like it has that like those House on Haunted Hill movies that came out almost like back to back with each other. It feels like Cube a little bit. Yep. Like it just feels like that, like really kind of retro ensemble cast kind of horror movie that was back in the day, early thousands, late 90s. And so if you really kind of miss those, like, you know, even a little bit of the remake of Dawn of the Dead is in here a little bit, you know. And it's kind of novel. It's interesting. It's fun. It's your popcorn horror. It's popcorn horror action.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun. So I would say this is worth seeing in the theater. And this is our fifth, our number five on our list. Mm-hmm. And it is our fifth number four. Our fifth four-star movie.
And it certainly has earned those 4 stars. I feel like, so this movie comes from the directing pair called Radio Silence collectively. Yep. They made Ready or Not, which Chris and I both loved the year it came out. Mm-hmm. They did the most recent Scream sequel, which I think was better than the reboot that came out before it. Sure. You know, these men make really good horror movies. I think they know what makes it fun. And I think they pay homage to like sort of like recent classics, things from the 90s, like Chris just said. I think one of the better things about this movie was its cast, right? Like Dan Stevens, that we already mentioned, plays a really good dickhead in both the movies that we've saw from the festival for him.
Yeah, one's more of like a cerebral dickhead, and then this one, he's more like a gangster dickhead.
That's right. Yeah. But I mean, the other cast members from this movie, like you've seen them in lots of recent horror films, like Marissa Berea, who was like one of the main characters in the Scream reboot, who's since been like let go and recast.
Yeah.
Catherine Newton, who was in movies like Freaky, and Lisa Frankenstein lately, was really good and really funny. We have Giancarlo Esposito in this movie, who's always really fun to see. And I mean, like a surprising turn from like Matthew Good. You know, like this movie is really fun and really funny, which is really on brand for this filmmaking duo. Ultimately, though, I feel like this movie probably would have been better served if they did not give away what this movie is actually about in the trailer.
Yeah.
You know, having seen the movie now and comparing it to the trailer, and everyone's seen it. We've already talked about it on Shooting the Flames. We know it's a vampire movie, you know, but it takes a good half hour, 45 minutes almost, before it becomes a vampire movie. Yeah. And then it turns into this ridiculously fun roller coaster. And I'm like, I would have loved to gone into this movie thinking about a kidnapping. It's and then it turns out to be something else. Yeah.
The first, you know, third of it.
Right. It's very Ocean's 11. You know, and I like, I don't know. I just wish that I was surprised. I
would have just loved gets more and more and more batshit after that, you know, right. Which is great. So it's fun. Popcorn horror.
And it still went to places I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be a little bit more straightforward, and it became more fun as it went on. I mean, as these guys do when they make films. So I am definitely on the lookout for whatever movies they make moving forward. I think they've made really good horror movies. They're going to continue to make horror movies. In fact, they're making a sequel to Ready or Not next. And yay. So like, bring it on, I say.
Yeah.
The last day of the festival was a shorter day. We only saw 2 movies. The first one that we saw was called Asriel. Get that, Smurf.
Right. Asriel. Yes. And so this is a post-apocalyptic religious supernatural film.
Right.
About like a super Christian cult, I believe. And it's alluded that our main character or characters are escapees from that cult.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, this is how people live in post-rapture. Is really post-rapture, what it is. Yeah. That's about all the religion in it. And it's just post-rapture. That's the type of post-apocalyptic we are in. And it's pretty unique in that way, right? I don't know that that's been really done before much. You know, post-apocalyptic is usually like human-made, right? Or yeah. Alien or something else, right? This is literally like post-rapture. What are the other people doing after that? And so this is also starring one of our favorite folks from The Babysitter and, of course, Ready or Not.
Yes, right. Samara Weaving.
Yes. And, of course, the whole part of this is that there's very little, if not no dialogue, especially from Samara, because they somehow think that it's evil to talk, or they're giving up their sinful ways by not talking in this cult. I don't fucking know. It's stupid. It's kind of a niche. Just for the point of niching.
Well, yeah, it's like gimmick for gimmick's sake, you know, for this.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah.
And I feel like we've already had a movie like this recently with No One Will Save You. It's the second time I've brought that up for a movie that I kind of like had feelings for. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that movie did it better than this one. We literally have only one character that speaks in this movie, and he's someone from outside this cult, you know, but like it is after the rapture. And I think the one good thing about this apocalypse in this particular movie is that we're dealing with apocalypse where we know that religion is real. Like people were raptured. Right.
Right? There's like demon-y things. Yeah. They're all kind of one note, you know, they all look like people like in black leotards to me. Like, yeah. And it's just like, I don't know. It could have been so much better. I love the premise. I love that premise. Right?
The premise is excellent. I love the
actors. Like, but it's like, what did we say about this movie? It was just not more than the sum of its parts. Right? Yeah. It was less than the sum of its parts somehow.
I feel like they could have done a little better explaining. I mean, like, for those people who, the rapture is supposed to be like the hell that happens on Earth and then the second coming and this ultimate battle, right? And so we're given a world where demons are already on Earth, but not Satan, right? And obviously not Jesus.
Right.
And so we know that someone is coming because someone is pregnant, you know, and it's either Jesus or it's the devil. And I'm like, okay. But the one thing they can do in this movie is have lots of action sequences. And I feel like some of the fights in this movie were really, really good. I think that you said you might have disagreed with that afterward.
I don't like it as much, no.
Yeah, I feel like I liked the choreography of the action in this.
A lot of rolling on the ground, kicking at each other for like 5 minutes straight.
That's how I would fight, though. Yeah. So it seemed very realistic to me.
Okay, well, you know, what we averaged this at 3 stars. So
yeah.
It was kind of middle of the roadish, but a little bit above that. So I think it's kind of the middle of our list, really.
Like, I think it's good to watch for Samara Weaving. She's always a good time, right? And this is no exception. You know, I could do without a gimmick, really. But ultimately, I feel like it was a well-made movie. And I know that it's going to get released at some point because there are some names attached to this, like people who have made other horror movies in the past and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to have a chance to check it out. But the last movie that we saw at the festival, and something else that has gotten a lot of buzz, and I think probably the most buzz of any like independent film this year so far.
Yeah.
And that's a movie called I Saw the TV Glow.
I was so looking forward to this.
Same.
I thought it was going to be like the centerpiece movie, and we came out of this movie and we really felt something.
We did. We definitely felt something deep, deep in our core. And I feel like the something that we felt mostly was a combination of disdain and
disappointment
and regret.
Yeah. So I think this is something that's really, really meaningful maybe to the trans community. This movie was not made for us, I don't think.
Is it for the trans community?
I don't know. That's what they say, right? It was like, maybe, but, or living living your truth, and like hiding who you are is kind of like a death sentence. I don't know. Like, I feel like it could be, you know what I mean? And like you're living. Yes. It's supposed to be, I think, for trans.
Right? Like living authentically.
The director is yes. Living authentically. And like, they're trying to like invoke Buffy, like with a show that they knew that, of course, they call it the Pink Opaque.
The Pink Opaque
is the name of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they do some good and some bad with that. But again, it like kind of belabors its point. It doesn't really end well for me or in a poignant way. There's no real so what. I think there's better ways to say what they're trying to say if they're trying to say it the way I think they are. But again, this movie just may not be made for me.
That's exactly the thing, is that I feel like this movie has a lot to say. And I think that a lot of people are going to get something from it. I just don't think that I'm one of those people.
No, maybe it's for younger people. It keeps being called this masterpiece, right? I don't see anything new here other than using like a lot of like pink and purple neon. You know what I mean? A lot of Gen Zers like it.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, you know, this is like the first Gen Z masterpiece, first millennial masterpiece and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, there's already been millennial masterpieces. And I don't know. I just don't see anything super special here. I don't see anything super meaningful. I didn't get really affected by that. And as a gay man, I should. So it's like, how are the straights going to be affected by it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ultimately, I think that the things that we've said are already true. Like, I feel like we are too old to appreciate this movie for whatever reason, even though we vividly remember Buffy from our like older childhoods. You know what I mean? I think this movie is geared toward people who are about 10 years younger than we are, right? And they may get something more out of it.
We're too old and too cis for this movie. I don't know.
I think ultimately we're just too old.
But we were the Buffy generation.
The thing is that this director, and whenever we talked about the trailer for this movie on Shooting the Flames, I mentioned that this trailer had a movie called We're All Going to the World's Fair. That was her first film. And I really, really fucking hated that movie. And I still do. Like, I regret ever having watching it because it was just one of the worst things that I've seen. And this movie is better than the previous, but not by much. And I don't have a lot of expectations for this director moving forward. I feel like she makes films that are all style and no substance, but the thing is that when reading the reviews for this movie, critically and on Letterboxd, like, people seem to be like licking its fucking butthole. And I just do not understand why.
There's nothing really quite. It's all there on the surface, though, too. Like, but she's not saying it. She's trying to show, not tell, as far as, like, you know, but it's also not saying anything really of substance. You know, like, really, like, there's better ways to, and more economic ways to tell a story that's more poignant and direct and important. And I don't know that this achieved that. And I don't understand why people are saying it has. And maybe it'll die a quick death after the festival circuit. Maybe it's just like the festival crowd that is just like, this is just, you know, like the Prada fucking purse or something. You know what I mean? Like, this is the fucking Birkin bag.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, but the thing is, this is getting a wide theatrical release. They are showing this trailer in front of large scale movies, things like Civil War and stuff like that. You know, they are, the buzz that came out of Sundance was so high and mighty that this movie is getting like the Talk to Me treatment that A24 did last year. And this is an A24 released film.
What it's going to turn out to be is the Skinamarink treatment.
And that's what I knew going into this.
This is the Skinamarink. This is 2023's Skinamarink.
Exactly. You know, like, I will give a Smelderly Award every year to the Overlook Festival, and that squarely goes to All You Need Is Death. But ultimately, like, now moving forward throughout years, I'm like, well, what's going to have the Skinamarink effect? Either people are going to love it or hate it. There's no in between. And this is the Skinamarink of 2024. And I again, just like All You Need Is Death, I can't wait for people to sort of watch this movie. And I hope to God they agree with me, but I feel like I'm going to be in the minority in this, and everyone's going to love this movie. I swear to God, if the Oscars roll around and this movie is nominated for fucking everything, I will riot. Because this movie ended and I could not get out of that theater fast enough. I was kind of sad that this was the last movie that we watched, especially since we skipped a movie at the end of that day that would go on to win the audience award for best movie.
It wasn't very good. We gave it a collective 2 stars.
And I feel like if I ever watched this movie again, it would go even lower than that.
I shan't.
Yeah, I shan't either.
Unless someone really spells out to me what I'm missing, like something, but I don't think I'm missing anything.
Yeah, that's I don't either. I mean, it's just not made for B.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fine. You know, it's fine that people like this movie because it's just not for me. And I feel like there's a generational divide at the end of the day with this. And I will stick by that.
I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. So if this is important to someone subjectively, please. Well, if it speaks your truth.
In hindsight, you know what I mean? Unless you've already seen it. But just like every year, they give an audience award and a runner-up to feature films. The movie that won the audience award this year was a film called Oddity that was kind of on the short list of things to watch. But we opted to, you know, go and, you know, have some relaxing time and enjoy our time away from our normal lives. I found out after the fact that that Oddity is kind of a home invasion movie. And I wish they would have described it as such whenever they were promoting it during the festival, because I'm down for home invasion.
Yep.
But apparently the audiences loved it. So it's something that I have added to my watch list for sure, to things to see this year. The runner up was a film called Humanist Vampire Seeks Consenting Suicidal Person, which obviously wins the award for longest title. And sounds intriguing, but we already had a film like Red Rooms that was very, very dramatic. And I felt like that's what that movie was going to be. So we'll catch these eventually and maybe they'll make it to our top list. But we didn't see them at the festival.
Nope.
So some of the films that we missed included a movie called Blackout, which is a werewolf movie. And so obviously we skipped it as the Film Flamers, and it's already available on VOD as of last weekend at the time of this recording. So anyone can watch it now. But other than that, there was just a handful of movies that we missed. And so we're bringing you a lot of content.
Yeah, but I definitely think the call-outs were End of Violent Nature, Red Rooms, Infested, I Don't Understand You, Abigail and Maybe Arcadian.
Mm-hmm. I would certainly not miss those movies this year, and I feel like they're going to be either in or really close to our top 10 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Well, I think that just about wraps up our coverage of the Overlook Film Festival. As always, we want to know what you think about the movies that we talked about. What are you looking forward to seeing the most? What have you already read the buzz about? Tell us on social media at The Film Flamers on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram.
You can email us at tiredqueens@filmflamers.com or call our hotline at 972-666-7733. Mm. See my TV glow.
What? I don't understand you. We have more content coming out for you this month. I know we talked about zombies a lot in March, but we're doing it again in April because these are funny zombies, and we are finally doing a deep dive into Return of the Living Dead.
Brains.
Brains. Send more paramedics. Also, over on Patreon, we are going to be talking about Return of the Living Dead 2, its first sequel. Equally as funny, but a different kind of film. You can find that in all of our bonus episodes over on patreon.com/thefilmflamers.
Well, Robert.
Yes, Chris.
I think I need to go get some rest and I need to go into the wilderness and get into a violent nature.
But before you do that, you're going to have to stand in line for your cue card. And have some sweet dreams.